Hello, and welcome to something completely different. This is Max Weinberg, your resident mechanics maniac, and today we will be doing our first of hopefully many interviews or discussions on a variety of topics in the TTRPG world. Joining me today is Casey Pappas.
Hello.
As well as our guest, Evan Noon of Imp Games.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we're really excited to have you here. Evan is the creator of the D&D 5e adventure Twice Dead in Terminus, as well as the supplement The Holy Book of Armaments. But before we get into that and what all that means, Evan, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, what all that means and, you know, what you do?
Yeah, my name is Evan Noon. I've been playing tabletop role-playing games for well over a decade at this point. I started playing Dungeons & Dragons in 4th edition back in early high school and never looked back since.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been a while. And, you know, over the years I've been playing, one thing I've always loved is telling different kinds of stories through a medium like tabletop games, because it's so unique compared to other medium types, right? Where the people telling the story are just as much part of the story as well, which I think is so awesome that there is a hobby that can really explore that. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing I really wanted to do was explore different genres using the game I love. Obviously, there are tons of RPGs with tremendous rules and tremendous teams behind them, making these incredible systems for different types of genres and different types of adventures. But at the same time, I'm kind of classic. I like playing Dungeons and Dragons a lot. It's my favorite for a reason. But, you know, it's sort of restrictive in its trappings to high fantasy. So I wanted to sit there and say, are there ways we can tell different types of genre stories using those same rules? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I just really fell in love with Western, Wild West genre, and anything in between, Wild West to cyberpunk fantasy, just playing with it as much as I could, and ultimately landed here with Twice Dead in Terminus as, you know, my first sort of major publication, which is really exciting.
Nice. It's really cool to see your work like get out there, especially like when you've been working on it for a long time.
Yeah, over a year at this point.
Over a year. Okay. Awesome. I was actually going to ask, I guess, what is there one specific thing that sort of clicked you into like, oh, I need to write like an adventure about this? Or is it just you were feeling Westerns at the time? Like, well, where do you think Terminus came from?
So interestingly enough, Terminus comes from Spelljammer.
Ooh, okay.
So for those who are not familiar, Spelljammer is Dungeons & Dragons sort of space odyssey, outer wilds adventure where you go to different planets, different systems, and meet crazy characters and go on wild space adventures. And my buddies and I wanted to create an easy way to play one-shots with each other, because as our lives get busier, it's harder to regularly schedule games. So we wanted just a sort of like plug-and-play system where, oh, what would be a system where you could just easily drop in for one game and not necessarily be worried about missing the next one? And we thought Spelljammer really fit for that, as all of our characters just being the crew on one ship, and then whoever's playing in a certain session is just the crew that happened to be on hand at the time.
Mm.
And mm-hmm. Okay. We sat there really sitting and thinking about what kind of one-shots could we do? Because we wanted it to really be like, oh, you could sit down for an hour, plan it, and then just get right into it as quickly as possible. And I started thinking about what is like a cowboy planet look like? Like, what would the players run into?
Yes.
on a one-shot cowboy planet, what would happen? And it got the ball rolling about, I thought it'd be really interesting if gunfighting was part of the culture beyond simply just outlaws dueling it out in the desert or lawmen chasing down posses. What does it look like in a culture where it's almost more spiritually part of it? What does that look like? And how do you justify gunfights being an important cultural touchstone? And that sort of got the ball rolling in terms of sort of developing a larger picture for what would ultimately become the town and realm of Terminus and its relationship to death and dying and what that means for the players and the characters in universe. If gunfighting is an important part of the culture, death has a really interesting relationship with the people who live there. And that's what really sort of opened the floodgates for me and said, oh, there's something here to explore.
Well, that seems like a fantastic segue to my next question. It's like, what's going on in Terminus? What's like the deal with this particular world? What's going on in this town?
Yeah, so Terminus is, it is designed to either be its own standalone realm that you could use for just like one campaign and never visit it again. It could also be used as a sort of drop-in town and region if you wanted to explore this in conjunction with a larger scale game. So general overview is this. Terminus is a cursed place. A long time ago, there was an ancient conflict between Celestials and Fiends that forever scarred the land, creating the Dust, which is a desert expanse where the dead never really stay that way for long. At sundown, they come screaming back as undead outlaws and roam the dust in their dread posses.
Ooh.
When it comes to the sides of the living and how they deal with that, well, they find refuge in the town of Terminus, around one of the only surviving oases in the dust. Here, the agents of the heavens and hells work in tenuous alliance to not snuff out the few remaining living people. To this end, they have constructed sort of the centerpiece of the adventure, the Afterline, which is a mystical train that carries souls to the afterlife.
Gotta be a train.
Of course there's gotta be a train. The good that board the train are taken to their final rest, while the wicked are consumed by the engine and become its infernal fuel.
Oh, God, I love trains. Sorry. I love trains. Like, the amount of detail that you've put into the culture of this world, even just from that description, is really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of taking sort of a central concept of gunpowder and building an entire cultural sort of fabric of an environment around this central image is really fascinating.
I think that's really what got me excited about developing it further into a full-fledged adventure, was creating that initial fabric that sort of, you know, informs all of your choices when you get to the real minutiae of what you're writing and what you're dealing with. When you have what you feel like is a solid foundation of an idea and you have enough pieces to it, suddenly a lot of questions start answering themselves and you get a really awesome domino effect that leads to something big like this.
That's fascinating. Like, it's so cool. And I mean, just looking through Terminus, there's so many like little mechanics that reflect the central image. Just to reference a little bit of what's inside Terminus, there is the like gunpowder itself is a commodity and relates to the spirits of the undead, and the Afterline like runs on this commodity, and everyone's trying to get their hands on it. And even down to little things like there's a weapon property called Trusty, and I won't spoil too much, but I'm planning on using it.
I was going to talk about that later.
It's so good. It's so much fun.
When Casey and I were reading through this, we both got to that mechanic. And I think I texted Casey first, was like, Casey, we got to use this. And he's like, I was planning. Like, there's no way it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
I really dislike running modules, but I would play this in a heartbeat. If someone was like, I want to run this, I would be like, yes.
That means the world to me. You have no idea what that means to me.
Just like the mystery that came with like reading and skimming the adventures. And how clear the NPCs are that you've created for it. And there are stat blocks for monsters, like custom stat blocks for monsters and NPCs and specific weapons. And it's all just like it all just really clicks together and is kind of really uniform in its like theme.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Question for you, because I'm very interested, and this might delve into the mechanics a little bit, which, sorry, might be stealing. Job. Yeah, might be stealing a little bit from Max. in terms of the, well, first off, there are two subclasses listed in Terminus, and in Holy Book of Armaments, there's a fighter subtype called Desperado and the Oath of the Gunslinger for Paladin, both of which really cool, really cool. And I would love the chance to play at some point. And honestly, may try and see if I can work the Desperado subclass into the Badlands somewhere. But we'll see how that goes. Okay. All that to say,
just kill Stump and I'll bring it in. Just kill Stump. I'll bring
okay,
it
perfect.
In.
Okay, perfect. Okay, cool. Stump's getting murked next step.
You heard it here. You heard it here.
World premiere.
Stump's boarding the afterline the next step. Anyway, I guess my question is, what's the process in building mechanics? How long do you take to play test? And what sort of inspirations? This is sort of becoming a big question, but could you just sort of step us through the process of building out a mechanic?
Yeah, I'll sort of walk you through at least what my process looks like. I understand sure. that everyone's creative process is going to look different. This is what has worked for me when it comes to at least making, you know, larger, more robust mechanics, especially if they're supposed to reflect certain themes or genres or ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, in the case of this adventure, I had the genre first. So mm-hmm. I had a wealth of media and stories to look through and find, you know, classic archetypes and through lines that could be called on that felt like they could be fun to experience at the table or experience pseudo firsthand through a character you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
For the Desperado fighter, for example, this is your classic like outlaw with no name. This is your classic speed pistolier, fastest hands in the West type character. Now, obviously you can flavor existing mechanics, right, with crossbows and crossbow expert and taking archery fighting styles and reflavoring it for firearms. Of course, there's a wealth of options for you. But when you're really trying to hone into a genre, it feels better both from a designer standpoint and a player standpoint if there's something deliberate about it, where it's not just reflavoring, it's something new that is calling on those ideas and archetypes and tropes. So the image of a pistolier fanning the hammer, emptying the chamber of their revolver, let's turn that into something that could feasibly be done.
Yeah.
You look at these big ideas and you figure out, okay, how does that relate to existing mechanics? And the big thing that pointed out to me was attack rolls.
Mm.
So this fighter loves making attack rolls. This isn't your grandma's fighter. This is your fighter that'll make attacks offhand as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
They like cycling through their weapon as quickly as they can, and to reward that gameplay, to create that positive feedback, to make it feel satisfying to play this character type, every sixth bullet has an improved critical range. Mm. You critical hit on an 18, 19, or 20 with the sixth shot you make from your firearm.
God.
And
whoa, tracking
this
bullets.
Fighter gets a special firearm that only they can use. Mm. You can't reload it early. You have to cycle through the bullets. So it creates this, or at least the goal is to create a positive feedback loop of making as many attack rolls as you can. Even if you miss, that's not the point. The point is getting to that last bullet in the chamber and getting those bonuses.
Yeah.
So this fighter will give you opportunities to make a reaction attack against someone who attacks you. And that harkens to, you know, a quick draw duel, right? You both pull pistols at the same time. This fighter's going to do it a little bit faster because they get it as a reaction instead of waiting for their next turn.
Mm-hmm. That's fun.
God, and that's for so the good. For the paladin, right? Paladin was an interesting one because until I started really sitting down and thinking about it, Paladin didn't seem like an instant home run to fit into a Wild West setting. But when I sat down and really thought about it, it made perfect sense afterwards, which is kind of the one of the best things you can hope for if something seems obvious in hindsight. A lot of classic Wild West heroes, they have their own code of ethics, their own oath that they follow, regardless of whether it's they're a lawman or it's just a code of ethics to themselves and how they interact with people and approach problems, how they manage themselves. That's a paladin through and through, my friend.
100%.
Yeah. So the sort of follow up of that is, you know, what does this paladin look like if it follows in with that self-imposed oath, right? You're not making an oath to a greater cause necessarily. In this case, the oath of the gunslinger paladin, the big flavor part of them is that this paladin does not consciously make their oath themselves. And that's just a flavor thing. You can absolutely change that to fit your needs. Mm-hmm. But the baked in flavor is that this is an oath that other people hold this paladin to. It's something that has happened over time. They are the stranger that wandered into town one day and dispatched that outlaw that had taken over without ask or want. And they develop a legend surrounding them of this gunslinger wandering the dust. And that story, that legend, creates their oath.
I love that. So this devotion to sort of this calling, this calling towards doing good wherever you see it, like protecting communities, like sort of Magnificent Seven style. Just
yes,
yeah. Oh, it's very fantastic. Much so. It's such so, like flavor.
The two subclasses tried to touch on those two really big themes with the desperado. It's like you're very cool. What, your Doc Holliday character, your pistoliers, your gunfighters, and then you have the paladin, which is more of your Wyatt Earp character, right? Mm-hmm. The one who is abiding by a code to make sure good is delivered regardless of the evil you face, right? Yeah. This paladin's tenets are one shot, one kill. No matter who your enemy is, they deserve to be put down cleanly. Living legend. No one can just walk out of their own story. The tales of one deeds are just as important as the deeds themselves. I am the law. The weapon you carry is a tool of dedication. It is not a weapon. It is a tool of justice. And victory to the swift. I will strive to strike first and strike true. Because if you don't strike first, someone bad is going to instead.
Chef's kiss for just flavor.
Yeah.
This is very unrelated, but I just found out that you can click on the table of contents and it brings you to that section.
Can I talk about that PDF? For a second? I can't tell you.
Absolutely.
Because I can't tell you how long it took to do that. Now, theoretically, it should be pretty simple. You open up PDF editor, you draw a little box over the page, and you tell it what page to go to. That's great. However, when you realize you have a typo or something's missing and you have to re-export the PDF, guess what you have to do again?
Oh.
And then again.
No.
I had to hyperlink that table of contents 4 separate times. It took me 3.5 hours.
Oh, God. Listeners, if and when you get twice dead in Terminus, respect the table of contents. Click to where you need to go.
It's there.
It's a labor of love,
it
folks.
Is there for you. I made it so that this would be easy for you to play with. This is all for you, listener.
It's fantastic. I was just like scrolling, looking for what page it was. And then I scrolled over where it said Paladin and went, oh, that's not an arrow. That's like a click button.
I'm so glad more than just me are excited about the clicking of the table of contents.
I guess real quick, we've talked about the mechanics for a moment and like we can come back to that. But do you want to give us the briefest taste of what Twice Dead in Terminus is about? Like what maybe in terms of story, don't give everything away, but like, what can we expect when playing Twice Dead in Terminus?
Sure. So the full adventure book, Twice Dead in Terminus, is a 4-chapter adventure, not including the introduction with all the player options and not including all the appendices, which include magic items, factions, new monsters, maps, the works. Over the course of this four chapter adventure, you will be investigating and looking to take on an undead posse. Because like I said before, the undead in Terminus are outlaws by their very nature. They are outlaws in the name of the law, and also outlaws in the sense that they are going against the laws of nature by their very existence.
Ooh, love that.
In town, the railway agents at the end of the line, which is the train station cathedral for the afterline, they have a divine duty to maintaining the afterline and ushering those at the end of their life to the beyond. And on the other side of town, you have the other major faction, the Soul Stokers, which are a band of infernal bounty hunters that track down undead outlaws and those whose time it is to die, but refuse to board the train regardless. So they work in tenuous alliance to keep things moving, to make sure the population of undead doesn't get too out of control, but not eradicate it entirely, so that way the gunpowder can still be used to run the train. While Terminus struggles to get by, something is stirring out in the dust. The undead outlaws are banding together into one posse, the size of which has never been seen before. Its leader is a mysterious outlaw known only as the Man Who Died Twice. Over the course of this adventure, you will encounter the Man Who Died Twice and his posse, the Spurned, and you will need to find a way to defeat them before they can complete their malevolent ambition of destroying the afterline and dooming Terminus to undeath.
Yeah.
God, can we stop the interview right now and just start playing?
All right, I got my dice right here.
All right, let's roll it up.
I rolled all 18s on my stats.
Wow.
Hey, that's pretty good.
Hey, there we go.
I would say, just people hopefully listening, you know, like what I said, like it all just ties together so well. Everything just like links to one another. It all just fits so thematically together that nothing feels really out of place. And that's, you know, that's hard to find.
What one thing I really tried to do was create a really solid through line between mechanics and story. I didn't want there to be anything that felt either redundant or, you know, just oddly out of place, that felt, oh, this is a Dungeons and Dragons trapping that we put a cowboy hat on. Don't look at it too hard. I wanted it all to feel as authentic as you could get it. So
yeah,
in sort of the player options, before you even start the adventure and you're in character creation, there is a brief history of the town that you can read and its relationship to death and dying and the angels and devils that are at play in town. There are new firearm options, new weapons unique to the adventure that give more player character options to people who want to live out their cowboy fantasy. Just because you want to play a 20 strength barbarian does not mean you are restricted to using an axe. There are firearms that let you use strength instead. That let you play out that vision without compromising character power. Beyond that, you've got special backgrounds unique to the setting. You've got the railway agent, which are the sort of divine agents of the town that tend to the train, and you can roll for your job at the end of the line train station, what you do there as your daily responsibilities before going on this adventure. You can also take the Stoker background, which is the sort of infernal faction in town, the bounty hunters that sort of busy themselves with hunting down these undead outlaws. And you can set up your relationship to them and figure out what's your relationship to the opposite faction. Just because you're working for the devils does not mean you're an enemy of the Celestials. The Celestials and Infernals are an alliance in this adventure, which is, I think, really interesting and can lead to some really interesting roleplay opportunities, because they don't have to be forever. They are right now.
And that gives such room for the players to sort of get in the middle of that, to pull from both sides and maybe push against either side. It's really neat. And I think, sort of in service of what you're saying, like what I keep coming back to when I read it is just the amount of detail that you put into it. Like there are
the specificity.
Yeah, there's a whole there are tables for character traits.
Making the traits table was really fun because on the one hand, if you're offering background options, you should also offer tables of traits to roll on for the players who want that or want pieces of inspiration. But also it gave me an excuse to watch a lot of Westerns and find character traits in those Westerns. So you'll probably find a decent amount of references to a decent amount of Western movies throughout the book.
Oh,
my top two Western movies for me personally.
Oh yeah.
You got Rango, of course. Rango's up there.
It's a great movie.
And Tombstone. Those are top two. How about you guys?
Famously have not really seen a Western. So that's part of the reason Casey's here.
What are we doing after the podcast? We're putting on a movie? What are we doing?
We're sitting down watching something.
I got Blazing Saddles on Blu-ray.
Blazing Saddles works. Like, it's a great movie.
That counts. I haven't seen it in probably 15 years. So.
Shoot, no time like the present. Go back this weekend, sit down, and watch at least 10 Westerns.
Yeah, just sit down for 26 hours uninterrupted.
What about Please. Westworld? I've seen season one of Westworld.
Well, that's, from what I've heard, that's the season to watch. Season one of Westworld is tight storytelling and is a pretty dang good Western. Honestly, like if anyone's seen the original Westworld, the sort of 1970s movie, that one's up there for me.
Wait, what?
Oh, you didn't know it was based on a 70s movie?
Is it a sci-fi Western? Like, is it?
Yeah.
Is it the same?
It is similar in plot. It's a lot smaller scope.
Okay.
And it focuses a little less on the androids and more on the park residents.
Interesting.
I think the original is good. I think the show is, or at least the first season of the show. I haven't seen past the first season, but the show does a better job of expounding on the themes. The original movie is pretty good and is pretty worth a watch.
I should rewatch it. It's a good one on the list.
I mean, at least for me, Magnificent Seven's pretty high up there. And I don't know if it qualifies as a Western, but sometimes I lump samurai movies in as well, just because the relationship is so close.
I'll take that.
A lot of my inspiration for the Badlands also came from old black and white samurai movies, and so the Seven Samurai might be up there with some of my favorite Westerns. Akira Kurosawa.
Did you just pick the same movie twice, though?
You know,
isn't Magnificent Seven based on Seven Samurai?
It kind of is, and that's okay. It's actually fun that you bring that up, Max, because some of the shots are like shot for shot the same. It's wild. Like you'll encounter.
It's remarkable.
One of the characters is like cutting wood when you first introduce him in both movies, and it's really funny.
I think that's a really good question then for both of y'all. Like, what was it about like a Western, not like as a genre, but in like storytelling mechanics that made you want to try to tell those stories?
With both Terminus and with Badlands, it's really interesting that we both have a very, very specific view on what the relationship with death looks like and how that plays into a larger sort of narrative, however deep that ends up going. Right, you've got crossing the river in the Badlands, and you've got boarding the Afterline in Terminus. I'm not sure about you, Casey. I can't speak to you, but I know for me, one of the big things I liked was the role that death played in a Western was always really interesting to me, because a lot of stories are all about like a person who was wronged, so, like a loved one died, and that sets up a huge thing. Or a band of outlaws is killing and destroying the land, and it requires people to stand up against those forces of death.
There are different viewpoints on death, like different ways of seeing death's work in the world. And like I see that in Terminus, and I see that in something I've tried to incorporate in the Badlands, is like different people in the Badlands see death differently. Some people see it as sort of this all-consuming flame that burns you from the inside out, and consumes you body and all. And other people see it as a river to cross. And I guess sort of like the Oath of the Gunslinger, that calling, sort of that calling that everyone feels and what that calling means to you, death is different. And it can be sinister or can be comforting.
That's a really nice way to put it.
Was that the first thing you thought about for the Badlands? Was just death? Like how
was death?
People, yeah, such a negative.
Little bit. it was sort of something that came about. Something Yikes. That came about through. Well, I mean, listen, everybody in the Western's got to contend with death one way or another, but like. It's a topic that needs to be broached in Westerns because it's so central to the genre is dueling and, you know, stealing and killing. And
it sort of comes with the territory for how dangerous the setting is traditionally represented and explored, right? Yeah. These forces, these dangerous forces have to be confronted at some point. Mm-hmm, otherwise yeah. You're living in denial.
Exactly. Exactly. The only things I got to do are death and taxes. So
there you go.
And you know, in the Badlands and maybe in Terminus, taxes might even be optional.
Hey, you didn't see me making a fantasy IRS faction. So
Jameson does do a lot of tax write-offs. So
That is true.
Yeah.
They write off those giant suits of armor. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
You got to. Otherwise, how do you make your overhead?
The mileage in Badlands, just being able to write off going from Thrid to Echo, fantastic.
That's a huge write off.
Yeah,
that's great.
How many miles is that, Casey?
Pretty big expense. Oh.
Give me the exact number of miles from Thrid to Echo.
Do we have a map? Can we see a map with a full scale?
It's at least 12 miles.
Woof.
And at most?
It's at least 12 miles and less than maybe 100,000. You know, it's somewhere in the middle.
Great.
Just to give you a ballpark.
Conservative range.
Yeah.
Do we want to make a hard pivot to mechanics?
Oh, sure.
Oh, the one thing I just also wanted to point out, is Evan, you gave three kind of suggestions, it kind of sounded like, for how the story would end, like how this adventure ends depending on different. I don't want to give them away, but depending on the choices that the players make,
the important part is to make the players at the table feel like their choices A, matter in a meaningful way, and B, regardless of what happens, even if they get the air quotes bad ending, it still feels cool that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like they lost, even though they got the air quotes bad ending.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of the endings offer new plot hooks to potentially continue beyond, regardless of if you got the best ending or the worst ending or the neutral ending.
But yeah, so we've mainly been talking about kind of obviously like Western themes and the adventure and the module that come in the, you know, Twice Dead and Terminus. And you'll get all of the player, all the backgrounds and the subclasses and the magic items. Is it do the items come in the Holy Book of Armaments as well?
Yes. So there is a supplement that if you don't want the full adventure, but you still want the toys,
which you should
you
want,
can get,
if you don't,
you can get the Holy Book of Armaments, which is a reduced version of the full adventure. It gives you backgrounds, new weapon options, new weapon properties. It gives you the subclasses, character traits, magic items, and monsters from the adventure, all at a significantly reduced cost. If you don't want the full adventure, right? If you don't have the group to play a full adventure, but say you're rolling up a one-shot Western and you want some Western-inspired tools to use and to bring to the table and propose you use without saddlebagging a full adventure alongside of it, you can get the Holy Book of Armaments, which is the companion, which is just the mechanics. Funnily enough, that name comes from an item in the full adventure that you will have to find to potentially get one of the endings.
Oh, okay.
It's the gun Bible.
Yes, you get all that in the holy book of armaments, but I think we alluded to it and talked about it a little bit before, but we got to just take a deep dive on that trusty mechanic, which I hope you let us kind of spoil it a little
bit for
this. So trusty is an ability that your weapons are able to basically gain through something. And I'm just going to straight up read what it says because I think it's so good, which is weapons with a long history or personal attachment can sometimes earn the trusty property. Appropriate times to grant a weapon the trusty property is if a character scores a critical hit at a pivotal moment or a character completes a personal goal with the act of the weapon. And what it does is it lets you basically roll your damage dice that the weapon does with advantage, correct?
Yes.
Take the higher damage die.
I guess there could be a weird situation where you'd want to pick the lower one, but we don't got to get into that now.
You do get to choose. It doesn't restrict you to the higher one whatever reason.
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
I mean,
sometimes you really want to do 69 damage, so you can pick the lower one.
We've all been there.
I mean, there are situations where you want to play blackjack with a character in order to keep him alive for interrogation. So
it's true.
I think it's so, like, it fits so perfectly, and that's such, like, what's the first thing you think of when someone, like, a cowboy walks in is they have their trusty something.
Yeah.
I think that that's one thing that D&D does really poorly, actually, in 5th edition, is your weapons are your weapons, and that's really kind of it, rules as written, that they can't grow with you. Obviously, there are some things, I think Critical Role has some of their like leveling up weapons that they do.
Yeah, they have like magic items that grow in power as you level up.
But other than kind of warlocks taking Pact of the Blade, there's no way for like your weapons to really grow with you. And I think this is such a cool way to allow that to happen.
Yeah.
And like this is not restricted to magic items or magic weapons either. This is a weapon property as much as reach or heavy is.
Yeah. Well, it plays into that central theme that you were talking about in this sort of incredibly dangerous world where everyone is in a very tenuous alliance with each other. The only thing that you have to rely on is the firearm at your side.
Yep.
And this plays into that so well. It's just everything comes back to a central theme, which is such a good hallmark of good writing.
I wanted to create something that was a reward for playing into the story and leaning into the Wild West.
Yeah.
That didn't feel like so completely like game balance altering. It's like, here's a free feat because you did good role playing. This felt like a really, really personal reward you could give because to Max's point, like in D&D, a lot of times weapons are weapons, you get what you get, and that's kind of it. So giving your weapons that little extra tweak of personality, that little extra oomph,
encouraging player interaction, encouraging storytelling. I live for it.
Earlier, I guess, also speaking about weapons, earlier you mentioned that you've created a way to not, or mentioned that there's a way for like strength-based characters to use firearms and not be penalized for not having high dexterity. And so that's in this system is a property called Brace, which kind of, as it says, is it lets you use strength instead of dexterity for shooting a gun, which is usually a dexterity-based weapon.
Yes. So one of the things that was interesting, Brace was surprisingly tricky to word because I didn't want it to be this like two paragraph explanation. Here's what this one little word next to your weapon does. Weapon properties should not be overly complicated. Mm-hmm. So it was really interesting to find a balance for the amount of power Brace should have without going insane with the word count. Mm-hmm. Keeping it simple.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the two big things that I wanted to make sure Brace did was let strength characters use guns. So of the new firearm options, the chain gun and the shotgun both have Brace. And Brace isn't an option. If you're using a Brace weapon, you have to use your strength. You don't get to choose between dexterity and strength. You have to use strength.
Ooh, okay.
But I didn't want to obviate certain fighting styles. Right? I didn't want to make it a no-brainer. You pick archery because you're using ranged weapons and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So I added the extra section to brace that says the great weapon fighting style can also apply to brace weapons. They count as great weapons.
Not so
you
get
that fighting style should you choose to lean into that, or you can lean into archery for more accuracy, whatever you end up choosing. It just adds that little more flexibility that doesn't obviate every other character option.
Yeah, it lets everybody get a hand on the ball, like no matter what they want to play.
Yes.
To jump a little bit again, because we're talking about the guns and how they can be used differently, paladins don't normally use ranged weapons because of
no, they do not
smiting.
Correct.
Because you can't smite with a ranged weapon. you can't smite with a ranged weapon. So what was kind of that balance for in kind of choosing? There is an ability that the Oath of the Gunslinger gets eventually that lets them smite with under certain circumstances. But what was kind of the balance of that portion of it?
So on the one hand, I accept that there is a conversation to be had about game balance in terms of paladins specifically. You know, they're mostly designed to be a frontline character, a tank type character that can do really big hits. I accept that. I accept that there's a conversation to be said about giving a paladin that can pump up damage on attacks a decent amount of range could produce balance problems. I accept this too. That's not cool, so I'm choosing to ignore that.
Rule of cool.
So the paladin, you know, to try and find a middle ground between these two arguments of let's just let paladins smite on everything versus let's keep game balance in mind. The medium ground, they're like the sort of the middle ground I found that my players and playtesters enjoyed the most was tying it to their paladin aura. So not getting the ability to smite at ranged immediately, but letting it be a reward later on felt really good to them. So for example, the Oath of the Gunslinger at third level, when they take their oath, they get access to new spells on their spell list, spells that paladins wouldn't normally see. Magic Missile is on there, Guiding Bolt, Phantom Steed, Faithful Hound. I tried to pick spells that like could really play into these Western archetypes. And they also get the ability to do more damage on attacks with their Channel Divinity. They get to do just like a little extra bump of damage, or they can sort of exude this gunslinger's grit that gives them bonuses to charisma checks and things of that caliber. At the seventh level, once the paladin has gotten so far, they get their Deadeye aura. And this was big inspirations from Red Dead Redemption, their Deadeye aura.
Yes.
So Deadeye aura has two major parts because I didn't want to just exclusively buff the paladin, because one of the paladin's big things is their auras help their teammates as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this aura is quite large. At 7th level, it's 30 feet, and then that doubles at 18th level to 60. While you're conscious and you're attacking someone not through total cover, you and allies within range of your aura don't gain disadvantage from long range attacks. So, you know, just shores up the farther end attacks, right? It's not necessarily a damage buff, but standing next to this paladin gives you a sharper eye.
Mm.
The bigger reward for the paladin themselves is if you hit a creature within your aura with a ranged attack, you can smite on that attack. So it's still restricted to being within the aura. So it's still a 30-foot radius. So you're not going to be able to Hail Mary 240-foot longbow arrow obliterate that raider on the other side of the ridge.
What's it like if you optimize it's something like 1,000 feet you can shoot a longbow or something stupid nutty. Like that?
So it's not giving them full access to just unleash divine artillery. It's still sort of playing into that. You still have to be relatively close to your target. Right? You don't have to be right up on them, but you have to be in the thick of combat to gain access to it. And then at 18th level, that doubles to 60 feet, gives you a ton more flexibility.
Ugh. God, imagine Salome shooting a gun and smiting as opposed to just walking.
That'd be... Honestly, Salome's already a terror at long range with the repelling blast. I think that'll come up in later episodes, but giving her then smite at long range...
It comes up in, I think, 13. So, spoilers if you haven't listened to 13 yet, Evan.
Oh, no.
Spoilers
for episode 13, repelling blast is something up. I did not prepare for.
Okay.
But it's fun.
There is one feature in this paladin, real quick. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, totally.
There's one feature in this paladin that I think is my favorite feature I designed for a subclass in this book. It's not the most powerful. It's not the most impactful. But I think its relation to the story and adventure that it's in and the story it lets you tell as a character is really, really cool. It's my favorite. It's one with your name on it. It's a 15th level Oath of the Gunslinger feature. And it literally makes you, when you complete long rests, it lets you make bullets with people's names on them that do extra radiant damage on hit, just a little extra radiant damage. It lets you ignore half and three quarters cover against the target whose name is on the bullet. But also, there's not really mechanics about this too much, about the idea of using something's true name and that giving benefits. But I wanted to put that here. It felt so appropriate, putting someone's name on a bullet. Mm-hmm. So if you know the true name of the target before you fire one of these magical pieces of ammunition, it magically engraves onto the bullet and gives you advantage on the attack.
God.
As opposed to their like regular name that they go by.
Yeah, so like if you just have a moniker, if you just have like an outlaw name, you'll still get the other benefits of like you get the extra 3d4 radiant damage and you get to ignore cover. But if you speak their true name as you fire it, you give yourself advantage on the attack as well. And you get a handful of these magic bullets every long rest.
God, it makes you sit here and go, the man who died twice. Who's really the man behind the name?
Just stumbled onto one of the biggest mysteries of the adventure, finding his true name.
And you may just have to find out in terms.
Alex.
Jeremy. Yes.
Greg.
John Cowboy.
That would be me. As if I played this paladin, I would just be up all night whispering different names to the bullet, hopefully it just like gets that surge of magic, and I'm like, oh, I just hit it. Yes.
You're like, that guy was Gregory. One question I wanted to ask, we sort of touched on it a minute ago. You said that the entire process of writing Terminus from start to finish was around a year, which is already impressive.
Yes.
Of that time, playtesting, how much of that was just getting players at a table and getting them to engrave each other's name on bullets? Like, how much of that was just playtesting?
Not as much as you think, honestly.
Really?
Now, again... This is just speaking to my experience that this is Imp Games' first major publication, so people are going to have different methods that they find work. What I found worked for me, and starting this project was a solo project. I did not have a team starting this project. This is entirely written, mostly edited, and formatted by yours truly. As I went through it, it started getting so big to a point where I realized this is not just a document for me anymore. This is not just a fun thing I'm doing. This is becoming so much more that can be so much more. And in order for it to really sort of achieve that potential that I could see, like I had the idea, I said, I've got something here to really see that through. I had to bring more people into the mix. I had a wonderful team of artists working on this book. It's beautifully illustrated.
Mm-hmm.
They did an absolutely phenomenal job. And for playtesting, the adventure was mostly actually written, or at least the story part of the adventure was written before we started playtesting. And the big things we tested, I had one consistent group of playtesters. We met every other week. And we would play, I think we played in total about 10 sessions of 2 hours apiece. And we wanted to make sure, one of the big things we were focusing on was, does the story make sense? Mm-hmm. Can the players follow the story? Are we giving too much information that makes it obvious? Are we giving not enough information where the players are clueless as to what to do next? So it was really finding out how much information is the right amount of information to give players. From there, the mechanics, some we tweak on the fly as we play, as we realize some are better than others and some need glow-ups. And yeah, some we realize that we need to cut. They shouldn't exist. They're just bloating too many things. Shout out to the Rails Angels, by the way.
Rails Angels. The Rails Angels?
Rails Angels was their party name they decided on. shout out to Rails Angels. We had two of them running different versions of the Desperado fighter with like slightly different mechanics to figure out which ones felt better, which ones had better flow in combat that stopped slowing things down, to figure out what it did and how things interacted. We had as many players playing specific backgrounds from the adventure and subclasses as they could, just to sort of feel out permutations of different mechanics. Of course, we come across all the magic items, all the monsters, to see how those boss fights feel and how just regular combat encounters feel. So most of it, story-wise and mechanics-wise, were already there before we brought players to the table. Because I find it, if you bring players to the table too early, there's not enough to keep them there. And it devolves into you stop playing a game and just start having a conversation about the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 100%.
So you want to have enough there for it to be a game that they're playing. Sometimes you're going to have too much. Sometimes you're going to have multiple iterations of the same thing and you're not really sure which one you like more, and that comes out in the wash. The Desperado was a great example of it. We had to try three different ways to make the Gunfighter's Challenge feature feel good. That very much, you squint, the aspect ratio comes in, and the wee-wee-woo appears. We had to try so many different iterations to just make that one feature feel cool and not feel complicated. And then from there, I think the adventure overall, like I said, it was 10 sessions of about 2 hours apiece, which... really, that was luck of the draw to get a pretty solid, you know, length of content. About a 20-hour adventure is like a nice sweet spot.
Yeah.
That's a sweet spot for, this is not going to be a saga. This is not going to be a year-long campaign. This is going to be, you're going to sit down with your friends every couple weekends, bang out a chapter of this, and then by the end of the month or two, You're probably done with the adventure, and you had a kick-ass time, hopefully.
Yeah. You mean to tell me we're not going to have 150 sessions of 4+ hours each?
I mean, let me put it this way. There's nothing stopping us from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every classic cowboy, to steal from one of the headers at the end of the adventure, you got to ride off into the sunset eventually.
Yes. I think that's a great segue. Something that I want to ask is, with Terminus not sticking around forever, that not overstaying your welcome, is there the potential for Terminus Part 2?
Yes, there is. I'm not going to hard confirm whether it will actually happen or not, but sure. I will say this. I do know what a Terminus 2 would look like if it started getting off the ground. I know the general scope of what that story would look like and what the continuation to the conclusion of Twice Dead and Terminus would logically be. Because regardless of the ending you get, right, there's three different potential endings you can get in Twice Dead and Terminus. Regardless of the ending you get, a decision point is made earlier in the adventure that has grave consequences beyond the scope of the adventure.
Ooh.
I won't say any more than that.
Got to keep those cards close to your chest.
Oh yeah.
That's really neat.
That's fun.
I would love to return to the dust.
And yeah, beyond that, like that's very far down the pipeline. But Imp Games, now that it's not just me anymore, you know, I'm primarily doing writing and design for story elements, but I have playtesters and a wonderful team of artists helping me out to help sort of realize these grand stories. we're going to keep doing what you guys are doing and playing with genre as much as we can.
Yeah.
So the next big thing on my plate, at least, is completely new genre. We're talking neon cyberpunk fantasy mega city adventure.
First Western, now cyberpunk, is just speaking my language.
And if people want a sneak peek at what this cyberpunk fantasy neon megacity is going to be, in Kobold Press's new game coming out, Tales of the Valiant, they have a section, a book called The Guide to the Labyrinth, which is their sort of multiverse for their game that's coming out. Mm-hmm. My world, this world, is one of the featured worlds in that section.
That's
cool.
So you can find a little paragraph talking about this new cyberpunk setting that is in the works.
Fantastic. What should they be looking for? Like, what's this world go by?
This world goes by Vital City.
Vital City. And when can listeners expect to see Vital City? Do you know when the Kobold Press book is going to drop?
The Kobold Press book should drop sometime around May is okay. My best estimation to get. Sometime around before Gen Con in August, because okay. They will be sort of debuting it and running it there. I will actually be running a few games at Gen Con for Kobold Press. So if you're at Gen Con this year, you can say hi.
Okay.
But my best guess is that I believe it drops sometime in May, and you'll be able to see it then, see that little blurb and get your palate wetted then. And then beyond that, the full drop of the campaign setting itself, hard to say right now. Ideally, before year's end, right? We just finished Twice Dead in Terminus, and we're doing our best to get that in as many people's hands as possible so they can enjoy the wonderful story that we all worked so hard to create and we love dearly.
As much as we love Kobold Press, and they got some great stuff, so please go check them out. Where can we find Twice Dead in Terminus and the Holy Book of Armaments?
So they are both available on drivethroughrpg.com right now. And hey, listener, I'm talking to you right now.
Who, me?
If you go down in the description right now, you're going to find two links. And those links are going to take you to 20% off on either Twice Dead in Terminus or the Holy Book of Armaments. If you want the full adventure, go for it. If you want just the player options, that's good too. Hey, those links, they're just for you.
One last thing to leave the listeners with, Evan. I guess, what would be, if there's one piece of advice you would give for people looking to start out writing RPG modules or adventures or even or mechanics or anything like that, is there one piece of advice that you could give to up-and-comers?
Typically, the most common piece of advice you'll hear is start writing now. And of course, that's true. The earlier you start putting ideas to paper, the more you start to develop your own writing style, you start to develop a flow and figure out what makes you tick. What I find is more actionable information is find a story you love and tell that. Find a story that you adore. Find something and run with it. Let your ideas run wild with it. Eventually, you'll find something that it feels so good to imagine and talk about that you're going to feel compelled. You have to write it down lest you forget it. That's how it was with Twice Dead in Terminus for me, right? It started as a goofy little spelljammer one-shot idea. And the more I kicked it around in my head, the more I realized I love where this story is going. I can't not write it. Find inspiration in your daily life and let that inspiration take you where it will.
That's lovely. Thank you, Evan.
Wiser words that's really cool. Never been spoken.
And may never again.
This is it.
Can't top that. Besides DriveThruRPG, where can people find you?
So the best place to find Imp Games is follow me on Twitter at @ImpGames_. And you can also follow brand new Facebook page that has just launched, Imp Ooh. Games on Facebook. So those would be the two best places to keep an eye on me and what's going on with Imp Games in the future.
Nice. you know, go give him a follow. And also, thank you for joining us.
Thank you guys so much for having me. This was an absolute delight.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing more of your work. And listeners, check out the links in the episode description for Twice Dead and Terminus. And thanks for tuning into something completely different. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with a Badlands episode. And you know what else? Hey, how about a high five? Thank you all for listening, and now it's time to shout out our patrons. We have Patrick Hickman, Debbie, Nathan Ritter, Chicken Too Tasty, Evan Noon, Avery Spar, Am Lovelies, Allison DeVelvis, Das Carpenter, Diana Bacon, Al Forrest Oki, Liz Spar, Carrie Lee, Jonathan Gunn, Tyler Gardner, Mira the Nerd, El DeSaul, Julata Pang, Michael Clevenger, Laura, Al, Chloe Utley, and Sammy Richardson.